Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, for me, but not always for him, Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. This is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, I went on vacation, and apparently the podcast fell apart. That's sad news.
It's accurate. I don't know who's happier to have you back, me or the fans, because the fans have been clamoring online and telling me that you need to get back because they missed the podcast. And so my ineptitude and ability to work behind the scenes on a website has apparently caught up with me. And I embarrassed myself with the inability to get episode 117 up properly. A positive sign, it's up now.
It's up now if you want to listen. It's on the website.
Yeah, 2 weeks late, but it's up.
Yeah. And we'll call it the lost episode. You know, it's too bad not everybody will get to hear you and Scott Warhite. I'm sure it was an excellent podcast. I'm sure you talked a lot about, what was it, week two of the preseason? Was the
correct. Yeah, it was right in the middle of the preseason. Scott had a lot of good stuff to say. Fortunately, we did get it on the Lions Wire site, but it wasn't up in the other podcast formats. So a lot of people that use like iTunes and whatnot missed out, unfortunately.
Well, let's hope not to jinx it.
Yeah.
Let's see how this goes today, or else this 118 will also be a lost episode. So a lot, to say the least, a lot has happened since our last podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Most importantly, the 53-man roster got set. In a way, I think it's a little fortuitous that we missed the last couple weeks because there's a lot of personnel movement that we can all just forget about now. Like, you're going to cover it one last time. We can begin to put it out of our minds.
Yeah.
And think about the dozen or so guys that were cut that'll eventually be back this season.
Well, I mean, instead of even going through, like, all of the positions, I guess
it was hit the heavy hitting spots.
Yeah, I mean, was there anything that jumped out to you, like you know, that you were like, oh, I'm surprised by that, or not surprised by that? Or I think for the most part, when I made my final 53 man projection, I said these are the five spots that I really don't know what they're going to do. And I missed on four of those five spots.
So I had a Quinn's keeping you on your toes.
Yeah, and the big one, the big miss for me was I had Savage in, and Savage is not in, and Josh Johnson is. That was the big one that caught me by surprise. But I pretty much kind of knew the rest, the other 48 positions. I felt pretty comfortable with so. Was there anything jump out? Like Dick, I said, Josh Johnson was surprising for me.
Well, since I was, you know, away, and I would only get in pieces of information here and there, I guess the Tease Tabor thing is not shocking because, you know, we all kind of figured he wasn't fast enough to play in the NFL anyways. But still, that he cut bait with the second round draft pick. The simple fact that he got rid of both seventh rounders from this year and Zach Zenner wasn't a surprise because he's still going to start a game or two this season anyways. And then the Logan Thomas thing, but you're going to explain that in more detail.
Yeah.
He's not gone, so I guess it's not shocking.
Well, let's back up to Josh Johnson.
Yeah, I guess that was a surprise too because when I left, Tom Savage was our concussed backup quarterback.
Correct.
And David Fales was somebody people were talking fondly about, but he didn't seem very good at all. Now both are gone.
Yeah, he was very up and down. Josh Johnson came in, and within 4 days, he was already ahead of Fales, got the start in game three, and didn't play very well. But again, 4 days on the roster, it's not surprising. Fales plays excellent in that game, and so now it becomes a competition. But then Savage returns in game four, and Savage plays average, looked rusty. Josh Johnson now rebounds, and then Fales hits the other end of the yo-yo and is now bottoms out, doesn't look too good. And I think bottom line that it came down to is Josh Johnson showed a learning curve and some physical attributes that the other two didn't. And Savage's concussion history is obviously a concern. Fales was just, it just wasn't going to work with Fales. And I think they ended up siding with Johnson, like I said, because that rushing touchdown that he had in game four kind of illustrates a different dynamic that he can bring to the roster. He also stepped off of the couch onto the field in Washington, and after 2 weeks earned a starting job in Washington last year and started
earned,
for them.
Earned.
Okay. But, but I mean, he...
He's next man up.
But he wasn't the only guy. But he came off the couch and then won, and then got on the roster and then got into the lineup when they could have went other ways. So
let me stop you real quick.
Yes.
You said there was a competition, Fales versus Johnson.
Yeah.
Now, easy for me to say because I wasn't here. I didn't talk about it.
Sure.
I'm not putting myself out there all the time when it comes to my Lions opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I always assumed that Josh Johnson was a competition for Savage, not for Fales.
Well,
they weren't going to keep Josh Johnson as a third quarterback, I wouldn't think.
No, I agree. And the reason I say that after Game 3 we saw a Johnson-Fales matchup competition was because Savage was still concussed at that time. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, okay, now it's a competition. But when Savage returned, I think most people thought it was Savage's job to lose. And if I'm not mistaken, every beat writer in their final 53 had Savage as the number two. And that was pretty much across the board what everyone thought. So I think that took us all by surprise. And then to add another wrinkle into the mix, they trade for David Blau.
Blau from Purdue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very
David
accurate.
David Blau, that name again is David Blau.
accurate at Purdue, but they ran a lot of crossers and quick slot across the field plays. So
good, like, quarterback coach and Jeff Brohm.
Yeah, all right. But I mean, what I'm, as far as from an accuracy standpoint, his numbers speak very highly of him. But the offense they ran at Purdue, it leads to that, right? They do quick crossers and then they do deep shots, and he found success in both those areas. Found success in Cleveland. We find out now after the fact that the Lions were very interested in him in the draft.
A while ago,
they sent their QB coach Sean Ryan to Purdue to speak with him. Were impressed with him there. And then they were impressed with what he did in Cleveland. And so that's why they were willing to trade a, 2022 conditional seventh-round pick swap to get him.
Quinn's so, like, I won't be around anyways.
Well, come on. But, I mean, like, you're trading basically nothing to get him. I mean, at worst, you're going to drop some draft spots in the seventh round. You're not even losing a seventh-round pick.
You're cutting those guys anyway, apparently.
And so if we go to that part of the roster, that speaks to how this roster is improving. We always talk about getting fooled by depth, right?
We were fooled by depth last year.
But when you have a team that's doing well enough that they can cut draft picks, that speaks to how the depth of the team is improving, I think.
Does it just say that you're not very good at drafting?
No, because
can play that either way.
But he doesn't normally cut these guys.
And you have to give him credit for that he's not going to stick with these maybe bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. But let's just put a pin in these seventh rounders for a second and look at Hard Knocks. Do you know? Saw the last episode of Hard Knocks. They kept, what did they say? Was it 13 or 16 rookies?
Mm-hmm.
13. Even if it's 13, I don't remember if it's 13 or 16. But they needed.
We have 10.
I don't think it's that. Well, they kept three undrafted, and then they kept
seven picks.
No, they didn't keep all of them.
Oh, they kept five or eight. Okay,
so eight.
So 13 to six. That's almost double.
But yeah, but they needed to keep all those guys, and I'd say in the last couple of years, the Lions needed to keep those guys in order to have that depth. Now they don't need to keep those guys. They brought in competition for P.J. Johnson. He fell behind, and they addressed it. Isaac Nauta was in the mix, and he very much still looks like their tight end four because he's on the practice squad. But they're going in a different direction. I think if they would have kept a fourth tight end, he obviously would have been that guy. But they felt comfortable going in a different direction on the offense, and they didn't think they needed to keep him because there's still a learning curve. Nauta looked very good in practices, but in the games he showed that he still needed some work, and Quinn wasn't afraid to move on from those guys even though they were picks. He also wasn't afraid to look at guys that were not draft picks and those guys that were working out in a positive way, like Kevin Strong. He was able to recognize that, promote those guys, get them on the roster. And so I think it speaks more to the depth this year and how it's more of a you have more evidence to say this is a deeper team than we had necessarily last year. So let me see. What were some of the other ones you mentioned? Tease, right? Tease went from a starter to injured to out.
To gone.
And that's kind of like how it works, unfortunately. He's very smart, but they were shopping him. They didn't bring him back on the practice squad. And that tells you that the Tease experiment is done. I thought if they brought him back on the practice squad, he's a guy that maybe they would promote later in the year. But they value those back-end cornerback spots as special teams contributors, as we saw with them keeping Mike Ford and Dee Virgin, both heavy special teams contributors, both very successful on special teams. And so Tease isn't that successful on special teams, and so I think they decided that it's time to move on, and that's it. They didn't even bring him back for a practice squad spot. So that the Tease era, I believe, is over.
It's all over.
Yeah. What was the other one? I'm blanking on what you said there. But, I mean, I think we covered most of it.
To talk about the Logan Thomas thing.
Oh, yeah. So the Logan Thomas thing is very... So since the 53-man roster was established, there's been a couple of transactions. The first thing was the Lions put in a claim for J.D. McKissic. And we'll talk about him in a second. They added McKissic, and in order to...
He's a Bevel guy.
Yep, from Seattle. Played 2 years under Bevel. And in order to make room for McKissic, they needed to free up a roster spot. Now, what they did was they released Logan Thomas. Now, this happened at noon on Sunday. So the day after the 53-man roster was established, at noon, they claimed McKissic, which means they needed to make a roster move, and they cut Logan Thomas. Now, they were not allowed to put anybody on injured reserve until 4 o'clock that day, if they wanted that player to be eligible to return from injured reserve later on in the year. Austin Bryant fell into that category. So they wanted to put Austin Bryant on IR. They also wanted to claim McKissic, but they couldn't do it because those deadlines happened at different times on the day. McKissic early, McKissic at noon, Bryant at 4 o'clock. So what they needed to do is they needed to cut a player to free up a roster spot for McKissic for literally 4 hours, then place Austin Bryant on IR, and then they could re-sign that player 4 hours later. And so Logan Thomas was the guy that they chose to have this this event happen to him, right? And so he was cut. He probably literally just stayed in the building. And like was cut and then re-signed his new contract 4 hours later. But the fallout of this for the Lions is they take a $30,000 cap hit, which
so that was probably the small. I was like, how did they arrive on going, it's got to be you, Logan.
Yep.
Because he's the smallest cap hit.
Yep. When they looked at all of the one-year veterans. So they needed a vested veteran that wouldn't have to go into waivers. Because most of the guys on the roster would still be under waivers. So when you looked at the guys who were vested veterans and on one-year contracts, you only had a couple. You had Ode Abuche, you had Danny Amendola, and all these guys had massive bonuses where if you would have cut Ode Abuche, it would have cost you $250,000.
Wow.
Right? Whereas Logan Thomas, it cost 30. So they cut Thomas, it cost him 30, they re-sign him, they give him another $30,000 bonus or whatever it was, something minor along those lines. And so for him, he ends up getting an extra bonus to be off the roster for 4 hours. But it's a procedural move that needed to happen in order for the Lions to meet the league's protocol.
All right, we don't want to drag this out too much, sure. But you have to assume that 4 hours that Logan Thomas was cut,
mm-hmm.
Do you think he's just sitting there? He's doing whatever it takes to not get injured in that 4 hours?
I think they literally
wrapped himself in bubble wrap and sat on the couch.
I think they said to him, look, we're going to re-sign you. We will just stay in the building, sit on the couch, eat some food, and in four
you can get injured eating food.
And in 4 hours, we'll bring you back. You'll sign your new deal, and that's as simple as that. And it's a bit unusual, and it's way overly complicated. But this is the way that the NFL does things, because they are forcing teams to release players so that the players then have control if they want to move on. So, like, let's say Logan Thomas didn't want to be part of this. He didn't want to be cut, even though they said, we're going to sign you again. He would have the opportunity to go, to take his money and go somewhere else. And but most of the time, it doesn't work like that. Most of the times, they wouldn't cut him if he wasn't receptive to it. So he was. He gets an extra little bit of bonus. You know, he gets paid $30,000 for 4 hours of sitting in bubble wrap. And then the transaction's done. And it's just the way the league works. There's all kinds of little nuances like that around the league.
All right. The 10-man practice squad was established.
You know what? I said we'd talk about McKissick. I forgot.
Oh, yeah. Let's go back to McKissick.
So McKissick was a undrafted free agent, and he was part of the Seattle Seahawks when Daryl Bevel was there as a offensive coordinator. Now, McKissick was a wide receiver at Arkansas State, and when he did a little bit of running back stuff, but he was mostly a slot receiver, and he was a guy that Atlanta initially brought in and said, we're going to keep you at receiver, we're going to use you as a kick returner. But he didn't last. They cut him. Bevel grabs him in Seattle, converts him to a running back, still keeps him at kick returner. They utilize him as kind of a mismatch weapon because of his speed. And then he ends up being odd man out in Seattle this year because now their backs are healthy. You know, they've always had injured running backs in Seattle. Now they're all healthy. McKissick is cut. Lions waste no time putting in a claim on McKissick. They add him to the roster. You've now got a pass-catching running back who's capable of doing kick returns, who has legitimate speed, and he's a guy who I think is now he can be your gadget matchup problem type of guy. A lot of what I think people wanted Brandon Powell to be, you're going to end up getting it in McKissick now.
All right, back to the 10-man practice squad. There's a handful of familiar names: wide receiver Tom Kennedy, tight end Isaac Nauta. We already talked about him. Defensive tackles John Atkins, Jonathan Wynn, linebacker Stephen Longa, and Anthony Pittman. Was he around last year?
Yeah, from Wayne. Yeah, okay. He played very well.
Also added Jason Kabinda. He was from the Raiders.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. If you watched Hard Knocks, they did a segment on Kabinda in the last two episodes because he was kind of a bubble guy. He was very successful in the times that they used him, started three games for Oakland last year, but they didn't think they had room for him. They cut him, and the Lions immediately went after him and brought him in to be their practice squad. He is a off-the-ball mic. He's comfortable making play calls, and he's a guy who, if the Jared Davis injury lingers, he's a guy who could get promoted. But right now, I think they're looking at the Jared Davis injury as more short term, and they have some really solid guys on the depth of at linebacker right now that I don't think they need to move Kabinda up. But he's a guy that I could definitely see bumping up if they feel like they need somebody.
Offensive tackle Matt Nelson,
converted defensive end from Penn State that they moved to offensive tackle this year, and he outplayed Ryan Pope, and Pope, with the big money, got
Andrew Donnell.
And he beats Donnell out as well. And he's a developmental guy. I would be stunned if he was promoted this year, regardless of what happens. If another offensive tackle gets hurt on the Lions, I would expect them to sign someone rather than promote him because I think he's more of a developmental guy.
Marvin Hall, wide receiver.
They just added him as well. He's a speed guy, spent some time in Chicago. He's like a 4-4 slot guy. So he's, again, kind of your replacement for Brandon Powell type of thing.
Quarterback Chad Kanoff, who, interestingly enough, was with the Arizona Cardinals.
Right, and this could easily be a
gamesmanship move.
What do you know? Kingsbury was on the media call today.
Yeah, he seemed pretty upset about it.
And he said, he said, Kanoff knows everything about our playbook. So now, I don't know how much.
He was being facetious. You don't think he was being sarcastic, and he knows exactly what we're going to do on Sunday.
He has a dry sense of humor, so sure. But I mean,
we'll see about this.
But he knows. But I mean, I don't know how much you're going to be able to extract from that anyways, and then how much you want to just rely on that. I think they're bringing him in because like Blau, he's a rhythm guy who has good accuracy, and that's and a big arm. So that's what they want out of him.
All right, moving on. Let's go to the injury report.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of big names on it. Frank Ragnow with an ankle. Trey Flowers with a shoulder. Sean Hand with the elbow. Jared Davis with his ankle. And Rashawn Melvin with his knee. All of them kind of practiced today?
All limited. Well, Ragnow has been with the ones. Flowers has been in the rotation as well. Both of those guys are expected to play. Ragnow is expected to start at this point, which is encouraging. Now, you got to remember that media access is limited, so we don't get to see everything. And it's possible they're excluded from different points of practice. But from what is available, this is what is happening, that they're both in the mix. Hand, Davis, and Melvin are not participating. They're just standing on the side. Now, again, the opposite is true of these guys. We're not seeing them do anything during the open media portions, but when the media walks away, it's possible that they are getting some work. I don't think Hand is going to be back. I think that's writing's been on the wall for a while. I don't think Davis will be back. It's looking like at least probably three to five more weeks, maybe three to eight more, I would say, for him. Yeah. Whereas Ragnow's ankle was not as significant. That's why he can probably come back more. We'll see what happens with Flowers if he ends up being on a snap count, right? And they've got Aquara that they feel comfortable in. And we'll get to Arizona here in a second, and we'll talk about what style of defense I'm expecting out of them and why it might not be Aquara that sees the field when Trey Flowers is not on it. So the big concern for me, though, is Melvin. If Melvin can't go, then you're going to need an outside corner. The way Arizona runs their offense, I think you have to keep Justin Coleman in, and that means you may be looking at Oruarie as potentially starting game one.
Wow, which is already.
Which is not necessarily ideal, but I think they would look to him over. Maybe Mike Ford gets the start over him. Mike Ford started some games last year, so that's possible. But I think they're comfortable with Oruarie. So I think we'll see how these guys play out over the next couple of days, but I think we should probably shift over to Arizona here if we're about halfway through the podcast right now, right?
About 20 minutes in.
Okay.
One thing I do have to mention, actually I don't have to mention it, mm-hmm. very unimportant. Ziggy Ansah returned to practice this week for the Seahawks, so Pete Carroll's saying he's not on the injury report, signs we're tracking.
Our buddy Gary Luke wanted to point out that Trey Flowers, a Lions defensive end, is on the injury report.
Yeah.
And so that might help you with your streak.
Let's hold off. I'm picking Trey Flowers to be on the, all right, you know what? Let's go with Gary here. Let's watch Trey Flowers on the injury report this season. All right. Moving on to storylines. The offensive line looks on track to play week one. You kind of mentioned that already. Ragnow is going to start.
Should be Joe Dahl at left guard, right? It looks like Dahl has beaten out
Wiggins. How's he going to play fullback if he's on the line?
Well, that's why they have Bowden, like the actual fullback.
Oh, boy.
Can I tell you,
though? The only wrinkle I liked, they take it away from me.
Can I tell you, though, that if you like fullback play, you're going to like what they do with Bowden.
I don't know if I like fullback play anymore. I like college fullback play.
Mm-hmm.
The pros, it's turned into a dinosaur of sorts.
Well, let me tell you, what they showed out of Bowden in the games was basically nothing. They put him on the field for 8 snaps each game, and that was it. What they showed us in practice is way different than what they showed us in those preseason games. He's being utilized as a pass catcher. He's thumping people. I think Bowden is going to be one of their kind of secret weapons that they're holding in their pocket. So keep an eye on him and what happens. It'd be interesting to see if they unleash him in Arizona, or maybe if they hold on to him a little bit longer. But he's going to be fun to watch.
All right, speaking of a secret weapon, vanilla offense, mismatch-based.
Yeah, you know, look, this offense was
overwhelmed in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't really try anything, right? They weren't going to off. This is a much more advantageous offense than what, again, they showed in the preseason. We saw it in practices more. It makes sense in what their approach is with their tight ends. They're going to look to be more mismatch based. And so, Hockenson, I think this is a week where I think we're going to get to see a lot out of him, because this is a situation where I think they can take advantage of his skill set.
All right. Not buying the taking, quote unquote, taking it slow at Tavai talk. But there's talk about that they're going to use him extensively.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to be out there a ton. Probably not 100% of the snaps, but with Jared Davis not in there, they're going to be looking at Tavai to pick up a lot of that slack. One thing I want to point out with the linebackers and how they use them, it's very interesting how they do it. When they've put out Tavai and Christian Jones, Tavai has been the Mike, Christian Jones has been the Will, which means Tavai's making the calls. Tavai has a little bit more responsibility. But when they put Jalen Reeves-Maybin out on the field with Tavai, Jalen Reeves-Maybin takes over at the Mike and pushes Tavai over to the Will. Takes a little pressure off the rookie, adds some pressure on Jalen Reeves-Maybin, who's got a little bit more speed. It'll be very interesting to me to see how they utilize their linebackers and how much play Jalen Reeves gets in this game, because he could really be a catalyst in how this linebacker unit is deployed while Jared Davis is out.
All right. Speaking of the linebackers, we'll move up a row. We still haven't seen the entire defensive line together, and that's due to Trey Flowers not playing the preseason.
Right.
And limited play.
Yeah, and Hand is still out too, but like, we saw a little taste of it in the Bills, and I think we're going to get a big taste of it against Arizona.
It's time that the...
Right.
The practice clothes come off.
Right, and we'll get into this more when we get into the matchups in Arizona.
Slot coverage.
Yeah, that's my biggest concern, right, is they struggled covering the slot receivers during the preseason.
Justin Coleman for that.
I know, and he played better in the games than he did in practices, but it was still a bit of an issue. You have a tough matchup in Larry Fitzgerald as a slot guy in week one, although Larry Fitzgerald he is the type of player that Coleman usually finds success against, and we'll get into that again too.
And the Lions preseason turnovers. Matthew Stafford was a turnover machine in practice. Oh, that's all I heard.
Well, that's because that's what people wanted to focus on, right? And then and really that was blown out of proportion. What I noted here was it's more about the Lions defense creating turnovers. So a lot more turnovers created on defense this year, both in practice and in the games. And that was a focus of the offseason. It'll be very interesting to see if that carries over. If it does, the defense has the players in place to be very opportunistic.
All right. Let's move on to Arizona. Forget about that Cleveland game. Forget about what happened there. Whatever. Lost the Great Lakes Trophy, but that's a sad thing.
Whatever.
Vegas line, Lions by 2.5, the over-under 47, which Eric points out, drives the oddball score of Lions 25, Cardinals 22. I don't think that's what's going to happen.
No.
It's a late game, well, not a late game, late afternoon game on CBS, 4:25 start. It's a Fox game. It's a Fox game. Dick Stockton and Mark Sklareth will be on the call, so we're going to get used to them, folks. We're going to get a lot of them this season, I'm sure. That's one of the lowest crews. Referee, Scott Novak.
Yep.
So we don't have the stats from last year up.
Oh yeah,
no, it's a new year.
Yeah.
So we got to give them a fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
New head coach, new scheme, right? That's the big storyline here.
That Cliff Kingsbury, that snake,
mm-hmm.
gets fired from Texas Tech, gets hired to be the offense. It's a weird ascension, yeah. Right?
Oh,
gets fired from his college job. Although it's not an easy college job, in favor of him, although he did have Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes on the same team, worth noting.
Right.
Went and became the offensive coordinator at USC for a month, and then found himself an NFL head coaching gig because the Cardinals think they're being smart.
Right, and his scheme is fun, but they were also, like the Lions, they tried to be vanilla with it. They only put... Kyler Murray, the number one overall pick in the draft. They only put Kyler Murray on the field for 10 of those drives. In those 10 drives, they didn't show a lot. They didn't have a lot of success. I think they had 6 punts, a safety, and 3 field goals, right? He's a dynamic quarterback. He can win in the air. He can win on his feet. There's a lot to like about him. But he's learning a new scheme. with arguably the worst NFL team in the league last year. I mean, they picked first overall for a reason. They made improvements, but when you pick first overall, as we've seen in the past, you don't improve in 1 year. You know what I mean? Like, it's a process. And so this team still has a lot of holes. There's still going to be a learning curve. They haven't really unleashed any of this offense, and maybe they will. Maybe they'll just take the training wheels off, and away he goes, and Kyler Murray will look like, you know,
Sam Darnold did in week one last year.
Exactly. And I think that's what everyone's fear is, right?
Oh, it's my biggest fear.
100%. That's what everyone's fear is. But, but, you know, Kyler's a good player, but we really don't know what he can do, right? And we really don't know. Is he just not, he just hasn't developed far enough in this scheme. He doesn't have enough exposure in this scheme. Because like with Sam Darnold, it was an established Jets roster with an established scheme that they brought him into, and they had players around them that knew it. This is a complete rebuild, so it's a very different situation than the Jets last year. And so there seems to be, on paper, an advantage for the Lions. But again, Kingsbury was brought in because he is a offensive, you know, genius, quote unquote, right? And the scheme that he runs is very problematic for defenses. And Kyler is a good quarterback in order to execute this. And so, will we see results in week one? I think that's the mystery of week one, right?
See, the move for the Cardinals should have been to hire Mike Leach. If they wanted that guy, just go get the original guy, you know. He could have left that Washington State job. We talked about Kanoff. We haven't mentioned here again. We're not going to go back into that again.
No.
We got David Johnson. We have an excellent running back for the Cardinals, and he's going to be facing our big front.
Yeah. And I think he's the big problem, right? Is David Johnson is one of the better running backs in the NFL who wasn't utilized that way. And then he's also been injured the last couple of years, which has hurt his value as well. But I think the big thing the Lions are going to be concerned about is David Johnson, and they're going to want to stop him. And I think what we're going to see is something similar to what we saw in week three, which is I think the Lions are going to operate with a bare front, right? Now, that bare front means nose tackle and Damon Harrison, three technique in Mike Daniels, three technique in A'shaun Robinson, which I think will be both A'shaun Robinson and Trey Flowers splitting that role, so not necessarily Aquara. And then you're going to have Devin Kennard up at the line as a Jack, and then you're going to have Christian Jones up at the line as a Sam, or basically like a Jack 2. And you're going to have five guys right on that line of scrimmage in a front where they're saying, you want to run on us, try. Because it's going to be three of the best run-stuffing defensive linemen in the entire league, and then two aggressive
big linebackers,
and then you're going to put Tavai and
big middle linebackers
and then Reeves Maben off the ball.
Not so big.
Not as big, but you've got the speed element there, and they're going to say, we're going to stop the run. We're going to go after David Johnson, and we're going to try and contain Kyler Murray's feet, and we're going to try and make you beat us with your wide receivers, which is an aging Larry.
Not bad.
No, but it's an aging Larry Fitzgerald who's in the final. But he's in the final year of his NFL career, which has been long and exciting. They have a good second year player in Christian Kirk, who is hurt. Trent Sherfield's. I mean, okay. They drafted Andy Isabella in the second. They just acquired Michael Crabtree.
They got Crabtree slot in there.
Again, Crabtree was a street free agent for a reason.
Underwhelming fantasy tight end Charles Clay.
Right. And so you've got, you have some weapons, but I think the Lions are going to say, I dare you to beat me. I wouldn't be surprised to see them maybe run a bare front with one linebacker and then run a three safety, two corner look. If Melvin can't play, put Justin Coleman on the outside on one guy, put Slay on the other, run your three safeties in the middle, go light at linebacker and heavy up front, and just say, beat us against the run, and we're going to keep a shell behind you and let Slay try and take their best weapon away and see what happens. That's kind of my approach. Now, if they try and spread them out wide, I think they can counter that with other defensive backs. And as we know, this defense is always going to fluctuate. But I'm expecting to see the same style of defense that we saw against Buffalo in Game 3 of the preseason. And having Mike Daniels and Snacks and Ashawn all on the field at the same time is problematic for an offensive coordinator.
If you take a look at that offensive line, it's a lot of veterans, but a lot of guys that came from other teams.
The Cardinals,
Join the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Justin Pugh at left guard from the Giants. J.R. Sweezy from Seattle. Marcus Gilbert from Pittsburgh. And at right tackle, A.Q. Shipley manning the middle.
Mm-hmm.
D.J. Humphreys, one of their first-round draft pick a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good player. You'll probably see him up against Trey Flowers a lot. He might do okay in that situation.
And if they get him against Christian Jones, then you've got Flowers against Pugh, Shipley against Harrison, Sweezy against Mike Daniels is going to be a nightmare for Sweezy. Mike Daniels could eat in this game, and it could be his welcome to the Lions moment, because I don't think Sweezy can handle him. And again, Gilbert's going to struggle with Kennard, but Kennard, you know, he is what he is, right? He's a good run stuffer. He's a good edge setter. He's not the best pass rusher, but he could give Gilbert some problems. It's not a great offensive line, but like you said, there's a couple of guys that are names out there that are not bad.
They have veterans. They have guys who have a lot of experience. So
yeah, but this
I wouldn't say it's terrible.
This is an arrow that heavily, in my opinion, points towards the Lions should be able to control that line in this situation. And if you can control this line and you go heavy up front to stop David Johnson and contain Kyler Murray, that's your best avenue, I think, to try and get Kingsbury on his heels.
All right, let's do it. We're changing it. We went for it on fourth down. They didn't make it. Let's get them all off the field.
Yeah.
Let's bring the Lions offense out on the field. Let's bring the Lions offensive line out on the field. The Cardinal front isn't that bad.
No, and they're really good on the edges, right? And they brought in Suggs, who's, again, another aging, terrific player, potential Hall of Famer, right? But he's
at the end of the road.
In the twilight of his career, right? He's going to have Taylor Decker, who has been very underrated this preseason. Decker has not allowed a pressure this entire preseason, which is nice. Neither has Rick Wagner. But now he has Chandler Jones or Zach Allen, the third-round rookie, who will be playing some defensive end for them as well. Most of the time it's going to be Chandler Jones, though. Chandler Jones is going to be a problem for the Lions. I think any way you cut it, Chandler Jones is a Pro Bowl player who's going to get his wins. If they take Suggs off the field and they get Jones on Decker's side, I think that's a good matchup, and that's when the Lions would want. Because Wagner can take on Zach Allen pretty easy. Decker can take on Chandler Jones pretty well. But if Jones goes up against Wagner, that's something to be aware of, because Wagner often will struggle with speed guys. But Wagner, again, he's might be the most underrated player on this Lions front. People love to get on him because he cannot guard, he cannot stop Minnesota from getting to the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of Minnesota, he's actually a very reliable right tackle. And so he gets a bad rap. But I think the tackles are in good spots, which means it puts your interior line. Glasgow against Corey Peters is going to be the one I think the most problematic for the Lions. Even though I'm such a big Graham Glasgow fan, Peters is very good. I think they'll shade Frank towards him when they can. To give him some help. And then Dahl versus Gunter, it's kind of a mystery. Gunter's not overly impressive, but neither is Joe Dahl, right?
Joe Dahl.
Right.
Yeah. Unless he's in the backfield.
Right. So this is a situation where you probably put an arrow towards Arizona because of Chandler Jones, but it's a much more even matchup than on the other side of the ball.
Cardinals won't have Patrick Peterson because he's suspended.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, they've lost the other corner for an extended period of time. He's on IR.
Yeah, Robert Alford. And so top two corners are out, which means they're now relying on
other guys. It's time for them.
Tremaine Brock, they brought in from Denver. He is starting. And then Byron Murphy out of Washington. Guy, a lot of us were very high on in draft season. He's a good player. They took him in the second round. That's good value. He'll be good down the road. But trying to have him match up against Marvin Jones or Kenny Golladay in his first NFL matchup speaks to problems. I don't know who he's going to match up against. My guess is because they kind of value him. When Peterson was out, it was Murphy and Alford as the starters. And then when Alford went down, then Brock got promoted. So in my mind, I think they value Murphy as their like number three. And if that's the case, they may put him on Marvin. And if that happens, it's a good Kenny Golladay game. But if they say, all right, Kenny's a better matchup, they could put him on Kenny because it's a good size matchup. Physicality matchup. Byron's not that tall, but he's physical. Then Marvin might be set up to have a good day. When they go to the safeties, you know, maybe they try and roll safeties over there. They have decent safeties. Swearinger's a guy that they brought in who's good, but, you know, he takes penalties, makes dumb moves all the time. Buda Baker's their slot guy, and he's terrific. But here's the thing. He can't match up against Hockenson. He'll probably match up against Danny Amendola, okay? But Amendola is so savvy, I think he's still going to get his. But if they roll Hockenson into the slot and Arizona puts Buda over him, that's 6'5 versus 5'8. Right,
I'm rather excited about this
because that I think is
the mismatch of this game.
It seems like whichever guy Murphy isn't covering, that's going to be a big mismatch. But Hawk against Buda, you're talking almost 3/4 of a foot advantage in height plus reach, and Hawk has been horribly difficult. He's been so bad to cover. Nobody's been able to cover him. And even you put big guys on him, you put long safeties on him, they've tried everything to guard him, and he still finds his way to get open. It seems like he's the big mismatch for me. The receivers are going to eat, don't get me wrong, but Hockenson, this could be a nice coming out party for him right off the bat in week one.
All right, so we seem to be more excited about the passing game, but we haven't talked about Kerryon Johnson. Mm-mm. And the line against the linebackers, or however you want to look at it.
You know, they have good linebackers, right? They have Hassan Reddick, who they drafted in the first round.
Yeah, so pay attention, all those Lions fans out there who wanted him to draft Hassan Reddick a couple years ago.
Now, he had a surgery in July that he's still recovering from, but they've said he's going to play. He's fast and agile. In my mind, I liked him more as an edge guy. They're using him off the ball. So it's a little bit out of his element. But they have Jordan Hicks, who's a very good hitter that they got from Philly, one of the top middle linebackers in free agency last year. So they have they have decent guys to stop the run, which is why I think they'll utilize Kerryon in the passing game a lot. And they're going to try and keep him on their toes. And I think they're going to try and use the tight ends to get those linebackers out of the box. And if they can get those linebackers out of the box, that should create more running opportunities. And I think this is a situation where they're going to use the pass to set up the run, which is not always the case with a Bevel-led offense. But this game seems conducive to that, where they're going to want to pass first and then see what happens.
What do you think of the coaching matchup? We got two guys who think they're the smartest guy in the room.
Well, it's offensive, quote-unquote, genius versus defensive, quote-unquote, genius, right?
I'm not throwing that word genius.
Well, I'm quote-unquoting because that's what people call him, right? They say
this is Mike Leach's offense.
I understand. I'm very much with you.
It's Bill Belichick's defense.
Right, exactly. But Mike Leach's offense versus Bill Belichick's defense, this should be fun to watch, right?
I don't know.
I think this game will be won with the Lions' offense. I think their defense will do what they need to do
to put them in position to win.
Yes. But I think the offense is what's going to need to drive this ball.
Score enough points.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what it comes down to for me, is it'll be the non-expert areas that win this game. It'll be fun to watch the areas that both these teams should be successful in, Arizona's offense, Lions' defense. But the offsides, I think, is really what's going to tell the story. And that's probably true in most cases, right?
And what kind of host am I? We didn't talk about the special teams. Cardinals have a good punter in Andy Lee.
Sure.
Zane Gonzalez is the place kicker.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Lions are favored in both of those matchups.
Frater and Sam Martin, there's mm-hmm. no more Ryan Santoso for those of you not paying attention.
I mean, Prater hit a 61-yarder, right, in Game 3, just to show he is what he still has the leg to do it, right? So, Prater's incredibly consistent.
Yeah, I don't think there was any concerns with Prater unless right. he, you know, got back into some trouble with some of the demons.
I caught a Matt Prater field goal that came into the press box press area in training camp.
That would have been real impressive if you kicked it into the press box. Even though it would have been a big miss, it still would have been real impressive.
It's very impressive. Seven floors up,
all the way to the right or the left, depending on where he was kicking from.
Right. Would have either been the right to get to me.
Probably to get the depth.
I think the Lions have, when you look at how the roster was constructed at the back end, they kept three guys that were in their rotation for the top four gunner spots on special teams. You had Charles Washington and Dee Virgin, who were the number one and number two gunners, and then you had Mike Ford and CJ Moore, who were the number three and number four gunners on this team. Charles Washington was cut, but the other three have made this team. So you're going to have two very good gunners, and all four of them looked really good. You're going to have two very good gunners. You're going to have a third that you might even rotate in, or you're going to put in like a follow type position. I think the Lions special teams is in a good spot this year, much better than I think they were last year. Last year, if you remember, we opened week one with basically one gunner. Right, and they had all kinds of problems trying to find that who was going to be that opposite gunner for the like what 2 or 3 weeks it took them. This year they open up with a plethora of good guys who are capable, because Travis Fulgham can be a gunner, Chris Lacy can be a gunner. All of these guys were in the top six, even though I really think it's going to be Ford, Virgin, and Moore who are really going to be competing for that special teams role. That's a good big advantage.
Yeah, well, it's good news to hear mm-hmm. that a lot of people take special teams for granted, but it's insanely important, especially mm-hmm. with a team like the Lions, who I think may more let they're playing with a small margin of error. Mm-hmm. They're really on the razor's edge when things can go one way or the other. Having a good special teams can help make up for, you know, and when being rather average on one side of the ball or the other.
And when you have a deep special teams unit like these guys have, you're not going to be hurt if one of them is inactive. So let's say CJ Moore, you don't have room for him, and now he's inactive. Well, you don't have to say, oh man, now I don't have my starting gunner, because you have both Ford and Virgin. Or maybe Ford isn't ready, or Virgin. No matter what the scenario is, they've got guys, they've got more depth at special teams right now than they've had in the past. And I definitely agree with you that that's going to be something that I think could be end up being a difference in one of these games down the road here.
All right, worth mentioning, Cardinals defensive coordinator Vance Joseph used to be the head coach in Denver.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And Lions, of course, we know we got Daryl Bevel and Paul Pasqualoni. Mm-hmm. Bevel's the new guy. Pasqualoni's returning. All right. Lions 2.5.
Yeah.
Lions favor.
I think it's
time to bring it up.
I think that's low.
You think that's low?
Because, mm-hmm.
you know, the home team automatically gets three points.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, Vegas is saying the Lions are like a 5.5 point favorite.
Mm-hmm. I think they're probably closer to a 7 for me.
Wow. And that's bold statement, because mm-hmm. if you look at the betting lines right now, beginning of the season, nobody's cracking 10.
Mm-mm.
I think the Patriots got a 7.5, and there's somebody else who's got a 7.5 out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there was anybody over 10, and that usually doesn't come till later in the season. So mm-hmm.
when I look at these rosters, there's only one area that I point the arrow towards: Arizona.
Would you have done the same thing last year against the Jets?
No, I don't think so. Right. I still had the line. We both had the Lions winning that game, I think.
I know that. Oh, I'm so upset at myself for not seeing that a mile away.
Well, good. Do you see this one coming from a mile away? Well, or are I'll you get buying to that. Into well, my
Are you
going to
pick first or am I going to pick first?
I like the Lions. I will go 27-20.
27-20, so you're holding. You're hitting. You're writing right at a push on the over-under.
Yeah. I'd say 6.5 is a good bet line. I'd say 27-20 gets me the win.
See, because last year they tricked us. Mm-hmm. Everybody got high on them, and then they did exactly what they always do. They tear our hearts out, right? Right in week one. Whether it was the players quitting on Patricia or the team being woefully unprepared, either one of them's a terrible scenario, all right? And that's what ended up happening. Perfect Lions thing to do. Thing is, they haven't tricked us yet. They they went 0-4 in the preseason.
Yep.
Looked rather lackluster, especially on the offense. A lot of people, we don't have high expectations going in, I don't think. Nor should we.
No.
So that means they got to build us up before they trick us again. Right? This is a very tough early stretch. They could easily go 1-5 in the first six games. This is a game they need to be in line to win.
Yeah.
They struggle in Arizona. The last time they were out there, though, they won.
They won. They won last year.
Oh, man.
Darius Slay had his first career interception return for a touchdown.
I don't want to get sucked in. But I'm not getting sucked in yet. They haven't tricked us yet, so it's coming. Lions, 24. Cardinals, 21. Oh, boy.
So you're sticking with them squeaking out against the bet line, too, just by half a point.
By half, yeah, I got them covering, I guess. That's probably a mistake.
I'm basing my analysis on what I've seen in camp and what I think this team's potential is. And I'm not worried about what I've seen in the preseason games.
I'm not sucked into this crew yet.
Hey, that's fine. That's fine.
But I did pick them to win, so look down on me anyways. All right. We got some shout-outs.
Yeah, you know,
not a lot of activity.
No, we went up 5 reviews.
Which is great, even though we weren't
on. Like, even
incredibly derelict and didn't put out a show for, like, a month.
I put out a show the wrong way. Yeah, right? But, so not having a podcast on iTunes for almost a month, and we still get 5 reviews. Led by a written review by Jordan Pappas, who wrote some nice things about us. I've interacted with Jordan on Twitter before. He's a good guy. We are excited to get the nice bump. We appreciate it. We'll be back on a regular basis.
We get more of a bump. We're back. We're going to be back. I'm not going on vacation again for a while.
It's regular season.
I will not be on vacation during this regular season.
All right. I'm excited.
Yeah. No, I'm excited too. This has been great. College football's been great so far, and we got Packers-Bears tomorrow night, which would be Thursday for whenever you folks are listening. And so, yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. We're going to have 15 more of these weeks where hopefully we're more positive than negative. I mean, I'll be negative, and Eric will always be positive, but hopefully positive things will be happening for this team. Thank you all for listening, and until next time, let's go Lions, especially in Arizona on Sunday.